Good morning, everybody. This is Lizzie and Justin. We are here again for Turning Towards Life. It's Sunday at 9:05. A little bit late. I was in a bit of a kerfuffle this morning, sorting my headphones out and things. We are very glad to welcome you as always. This is a third space coaching project that Justin and I began. We've realized that we're at episode number 50, which is very exciting. And Justin said to me, in 2 weeks, it'll be a year. And I went, wow. And then realized that, yes, 52 weeks is indeed a year. A bit slow on the uptake. So I'm so excited that we've done this and that we are nearly at a year of doing something. It's extraordinary. So we have a source that Justin chose today, which is very beautiful. And we are very much looking forward to going into this with you all. I'm very happy that we're here this morning on this lovely Sunday in London. It's a bit gloomy and I think the winter's setting in, and I'm feeling very happy and grateful to be here right now.
Me too. I'm always very, very glad to be doing this. Excited that we've reached 50. Maybe at 52, we'll have to have some kind of celebration. This source is from this very wonderful book. I thought I'd bring a copy of the book down because I love the way they've done the cover. This is real, and you are completely unprepared. And the reason I'm bringing this source now is we're doing this episode right in the middle of the period in the Jewish year that goes from New Year to the Day of Atonement, from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur, and it's very intense 10 days of reflection and introspection. And this book by Alan Liu is subtitled The Days of Awe, which is this time in Jewish life as a journey of transformation.
What does it say all the way around, Justin?
This, if I open it, this is real, and you are completely unprepared. Which seems to me true. One of the things I love about this book. So it's a wonderful book for everyone, of course, written from a very particular perspective. And here we go. Here's a part that Alan Liu writes in the chapter that is about what it is to be in the midst of a deep encounter with the possibility of return in our lives. So I will read. Spiritual deadness is a habit. Something in us wants to be dead, wants to escape our reality, and we've expressed this desire in 100 little patterns and habits. So a physical shaking up of our stale routines might actually serve to loosen us up inside and lead the way to inner change. But eventually this stops working too, and sooner or later, we have to address the inner roots of the problem of burnout and routinization directly. The first thing we should do when we feel we have lost all our passion is to try to find it. This involves a kind of inner turning, an expression of will, an expression of faith, the belief that this passion exists, even though we neither feel it nor see it at the moment. This is a paradigm well mapped out in the novels of Hermann Hesse, especially Siddhartha. Siddhartha is the story of a young monk who is lured away from a long and extremely devoted spiritual path by his lust for a beautiful woman, a lust that alters the course of his life. He becomes a businessman, totally involved in the corruption and the pleasures of ordinary life. He marries, becomes dissolute, takes up gambling and adultery, and loses his wife. His son rebels against him and finally rejects him altogether, causing him unbearable pain. And finally, broken and despairing, he becomes a recluse, a ferryman carrying people back and forth across the river. And there, on the river, the deep and abiding wisdom he sought in his youth begins to ripen in his soul until he finally comes to the following understanding. The world is not imperfect or slowly evolving along a path to perfection. No, it is perfect at every moment. Every sin already carries grace within it. All small children are potential old men. All sucklings have death within them, all dying people eternal life. Everything is good, everything is perfect. Death as well as life, sin as well as holiness, wisdom as well as folly. Everything is necessary. Everything needs only my agreement, my assent, my loving understanding, my turning toward. The critical moment in this story is a subtle turn of mind, a moment when the hero must bring his consciousness back to the path he abandoned, back to the path he has imagined doesn't even exist anymore.
So I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's very long. I'm going to read the last part. The world is not imperfect or slowly evolving along a path to perfection. No, it is perfect at every moment. Every sin already carries grace within it. All small children are potential old men. All sucklings have death within them. All dying people, eternal life. Everything is good. Everything is perfect. Death as well as life, sin as well as holiness, wisdom as well as folly. Everything is necessary. Everything needs only my agreement, my assent, my loving understanding, my turning toward. The critical moment in this story is a subtle turn of mind, a moment when the hero must bring his consciousness back to the path he abandoned, back to the path he has imagined doesn't even exist anymore.
Now, I have to say, I find this really challenging, which is why I brought it. That, and there's so many different parts in this, but the part that you just read, where Siddhartha, after this long life of struggle, of striving to be a spiritual person and then throwing himself into the material world with all of its tos and fros and his faults and failings, and that he comes to the conclusion that everything is perfect, is both deeply inviting to me. And I know when I find contact with that, allows me to be in so many ways of life and in life. But at the same time, there's a part of me, that objects, that goes, yeah, but there's still so much that we have to fix up and repair, which also seems true, and maybe this is included. And then I really get what Alan Liu is saying at the start about the part of us that really doesn't want to face any of this, and that whilst we're right in the middle of life, I don't know if the text reminds me now, but the part of us that wants to be dead to life and will have us, that in a way can't face the enormity of what it is for everything to be contained in everything and for everything to be welcome and yet to want to engage with the world, and would rather just have me numb myself through a million tiny habits of I suppose of being absent. So that part I really recognize, and Siddhartha's part I think rightly is a struggle for me.
Yeah, as you're speaking, the bit that really moves me is that even though you fall asleep and those habits form and we want to die in deadness and all of that, that the path doesn't go anywhere. Like, in spite of ourselves, the path is there for us to return to at any point that we wanted to, or that we woke up or something happened. And that's the bit that I feel really comforted by. And maybe it's the piece where the part about the world being not imperfect is speaking from, is that part of things that doesn't shift or move or change that we can access and then fall asleep to, and then we're back in the game again, and then we're off being delusional or something, but there's something that we can come back to again. And the real, what I appreciate about this entire thing is, like, it's filled with the kind of the trappings of things, the trappings of a life, the things that can take us out. And I think it's also metaphorical for the fact that this happens to like every single person, doesn't it? I think anyway, you know, that we get sucked into things and we lose perspective and we become our story somehow and believe everything we tell ourselves and everything we read, and we get kind of hypnotized. And it feels like this whole thing is saying that we can wake up, and if we do, and if everything breaks, and if really difficult things happen, something remains that is there for us and is waiting for us and can be a welcome if we allow the brokenness to break us in a way. So that's how I read it, and that's how it's a very hopeful thing for me. And I guess the bit that I also really appreciated, Justin, is when it said, everything needs only my agreement, my assent, my loving understanding, my turning toward. And I always feel really touched when we find the turning towards anywhere in a piece of writing, where I go, oh, yes, that's what we're doing. We're turning into, towards these different things. And when we do turn toward, maybe this is what opens up, is the path. And the act of turning toward, the practice of turning toward, is the thing that gives birth to the understanding, the feeling, the knowledge, the sensation of what the path is. And all it takes is turning toward, and there it is.
It's quite a thing to say, and I think you're right. I mean, I agree with you that all it takes is turning toward. And I notice as we're talking that I can feel, I think where I get into trouble with this and really struggle with it is how quick I am to object to the conditions of the world or the conditions of myself. So it's like, I was getting onto this whilst you were talking, but I think it's very easy for me to have a super high standard about how things should be. So I should be blameless and faultless, generous, kind, wise, and something in every way. And the world should meet me. The world shouldn't be filled with difficulty. It should be heavenly and kind and loving and beautiful in return, in a straightforward way. And when, I'll just start with me, when I find myself falling short of this ideal, as I so often do, I think the really easiest move for me has two parts to it. So one is I get really angry that I did this and I was this way. And the second thing is I want to get out. I mean, I want to get out of life as a whole, but I want to not be in this situation where I and everything is so not the way I want it to be. And that's the moment where almost my habits of leaving the world, of, you know, numbing and turning away, most come in. So I sort of have an expectation I miss it. And interestingly, in just to bring in the Jewish spiritual path part here, that the word that's often translated as sin in English, in Hebrew, basically means missing something, like aiming for something and missing. And so, but the thing is, when I miss in that way, I think my judgment about the world is very easily and very quickly, and myself, is I'm wrong, I'm bad, I've fallen short, the world has fallen short, I can't meet the world can't meet me. Better just to numb out on a Facebook feed or on a, you know, or just numb out. I mean, it's really easy, so I don't actually need anything to do that. And so the realization that Siddhartha comes to, that you were pointing to at the end, which I think is so powerful, and so this is why I think I find it difficult, is to be able to say there's goodness even in the right in the heart of the times I find myself most selfish. There's actually one of the lines in here, there's death in my life. and there's life in my death. It's all built into everything. There's trouble even in our most noble attempt to take care of things, that everything is in everything, and that the turning toward that Hermann Hesse's for in writing this is a turning towards the sheer extraordinary complexity and wholeness of everything in every moment. And then it seems to me actually we can take action. Like if I'm prepared to say my life includes death, my trouble includes possibility, my hurt contains joy, my, you know, all of that, then I can also start to take some care over how I bring myself to my life rather than leaving it. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, in a way it seems very paradoxical to me, because this loving turn is as you were pointing to, is to welcome all of it and then to respond from there. And the easy thing to do, at least for me, is reject all of it.
Mm.
In the secret hope, I think that if I keep rejecting long enough, somebody or something will come and get me, you know, and sort of haul me back.
Mm.
But that's not what's being called for here. It's actually the turn itself, our turn back into our own lives. That's the super simple and super difficult and super easy move that's right in front of us all the time.
Mm. Yeah, when you're talking, Justin, it's like I can feel the... Like I can feel every tantrum I've ever had, every freak out I've ever had, every wounding, you know, every disagreement about the world not being the way that I want it, people not being the way that I want them to be, me not being the way I want me to be, all that stuff. And the thing that keeps coming back into my mind is like this understanding that over the years, somehow I've found as really helpful is this kind of mantra, I guess, that the healing is in the return. And that in order for our healing to happen, these things have to happen, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to return and then there wouldn't be healing. So it's another expression of everything is in everything else. And I remember the place I learned that was, I was with Sharon Salzberg, and she was doing a little workshop on loving kindness, and we did a meditation, and I said, oh my gosh, I'm basically completely deranged. You know, you asked us to meditate for like 5 minutes. I said, I was all over the shop. I was thinking about my shopping list. I was thinking about the man I could have said something to, and I didn't, because I was too triggered, and then I regretted it. And I was thinking, you know, I just said, oh my gosh, I was all over the shop. Like, I don't even, you know, I can't call myself a meditator. Like, that was terrible. And that's what she said to me. She said, Lizzie, the healing is in the return. And you have to go away from yourself in order to feel what the gift of return is. And the gift is essentially your birthright. That returning is the way home. And it's like in the acceptance that the world is going to go wrong. I mean, maybe that's some belief system or something, but just in my experience so far, and with most humans I've ever met, they haven't had this kind of ridiculously perfect, charmed life. I don't think that exists. And so the inevitable difficulty, the inevitable wounding, the inevitable loss, the inevitable trickiness of being a human being, it just is. And to know that in the return, from our wounding, from our difficulty, from our shame, from our darkness, there is a return to self that opens up this path. For me, that's like the biggest, beautifulest miracle, really. And it's, again, comes back to the faith that that path is there if I was to turn around and do this subtle turn of mind, that I can. And the other part of the hopefulness is that I can do that. That's not in the hands of someone else. That's not in the hands of a power that I can't have any influence over. It's mine, and I can do the thing. which is that no matter how wounded I am, no matter how disenfranchised I feel, no matter how rejected I feel, within me is the capacity to turn into the rejection, to turn into the wound. And I am in relationship to that in a way that is part of this return to the path. And then including whatever that is as the path feels like ridiculously miraculous, that there's something to do with it. Like there's something to be done rather than be a victim and be done to my whole life. And I feel so grateful for that thing, that that is a human capability that we, I think we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, Justin, the kind of birthright that we have to be intentional beings.
Right.
And that our intention to turn towards or to heal or to see whatever difficulty crosses my life as my path and to orient as a learner. How powerful is that intention? I mean, it's really miraculous to me that that is possible as a human being. And that we get to do that together and help one another find our intentionality for that so that we can include and include and include and include and integrate all these pieces. It's amazing.
I love that you talked about tantrums. And I was thinking about years and years and years ago, very fabulous person who I know and love very much, who's now in her 20s, when she was about 2, we were out walking with her parents not far from where we live, and she saw a playground and wanted to get in, and so asked if we would open the gate in the fence so that we could go in. And the problem was, Lizzie, was that there was no gate in the fence. So she, being 2, went into the most fabulous 2-year-old tantrum. She lay on the ground and banged and kicked her legs and screamed, "Open the gate, open the gate, open the gate." Nothing anybody could do would reassure her that there just wasn't a gate in the fence that anyone could open. That wasn't where we were. There's no gate. And I feel like that often. You know, that exactly this, I want life and myself to be so different to how they are.
Mm.
And whether I'm having an outer tantrum, which is less common with me, or an inner tantrum, I don't want anyone to see. I'm in massive rebellion against the world. And the worst part of it, and the gift that in what you're saying gets revealed in here, is how quickly every kind of hurt and wounding and judgment gets piled in. So the further away I feel from life, the more my judgments come in about how terrible this is and how awful I am and what mistake I'm making, and I'm going further and further and further. And usually at some point, always at some point so far, I find my way to this place where I can see what it is that you're talking about and I can come back. And I agree with the moment of return to life and just to the basic truthfulness of things is such a gift. And I know it's a gift to me. It's also a gift to my capacity to contribute and also to other people around me. You know, and I'm sure that's true of any of us. And that... we have to go to meditation classes with Sharon Salzberg to be taught this, or read Siddhartha or Alan Liu or whatever, or have these conversations for 50 weeks. Reminds me that it at once is not far away. It's not over the hills or across the sea or anything like that. And yet it's I don't know how to say this. It's really tricky, and maybe if it wasn't tricky, if the nature of us human beings was we'd encounter some trouble and we'd just go, oh, and we'd just return, somehow we'd be missing something as well. It's in the struggle and the grappling with ourselves and the learning how to return that something very important about the way of being in the world that human beings can be gets uncovered.
Yeah. And that's the nature of the return, is that in order to return, there has to be an awareness. And like, I think that's why I love that so much, was because the awareness is inevitable and necessary and part of things, like this reading saying everything is necessary. And so it's a kind of the gift of there being a possibility of transforming something that feels like it's just got badness in it and there's nothing hopeful here and I can't see the wood for the trees, like this is not okay, that there it has its place. It's not wrong. It's not outside of what's acceptable in a human life. It might be painful and horrible and terrible, and it has its place. Just that feeling of that, and to kind of accept that, feels really hopeful. And sometimes I might be in the pit and all this does not make sense to me at all. You know, I'm like, yeah, what a load of stuff. Like, this is really personal to me. This is a really big deal. Please don't come near me. I'm in the shit and nobody understands it. Blah, 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 blah. And hopefully at those times, there's someone who isn't in the pit who can be with me in a certain way that maybe doesn't tell me all of this, but who could be with me as a representation of the path, as a representation of a reminder that all is not lost and that there is still hope. And I know I feel like I'm always the one banging this drum, but I really so deeply and firmly believe that this is only possible when we're in community and in relationship with one another.
Yes.
I don't understand how I could be in receipt of this understanding and this capacity to be in my path of learning without other human beings having paved the way for me, to the side of me, above me, below me, behind me, like whether it's a book I've read or a person I've met or a coaching relationship that I've had or friends doing work that's meaningful with me or family members. It's like I do not exist in my path without other people having been there and who will be there in the future and who are there now. And I don't think it's an easy thing, but I think that things that aren't easy are made possible by being in relationship in this personal realm of how we unfold as human beings. The relationship part of it is what provides hope and possibility and different horizons that you really can't see from the pit. You just can't. And then gradually learning again and again that to know that I'm in the pit and to know what happens when I'm in the pit and what kind of thoughts I think when I'm in the pit, and to recognize it's time to ask for help and it's time to talk to people and find a way of being vulnerable enough to say, I can't do this alone. Please, someone, something needs to help me. And in a way, I feel like that's the gift of turning towards life, is that if there is only one person who listens to this and goes, oh, there's something real here and I'm not as lost as I thought I might be because there's a conversation happening that is in some way meaningful to me. Like, that feels like what we're supposed to do as humans to me. I don't know a more reasonable, appropriate way to be in the world than to be a stand for the kind of presence that enables return, that enables some kind of healing, some kind of access to something other than the pit when you're in it. And that feels like the most important thing I can invest my life force into, is how to be that.
I'm, as you know, totally in agreement about this with you, that we can't do this on our own. In fact, one of the biggest mistakes we make is to try and do this on our own.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I said I'd chosen this passage because of the kind of book that it comes from where in the Jewish cycle of the year things are, and on Tuesday night and Wednesday is Yom Kippur, which is the Day of Atonement, but really it's a day of return. And what's really fascinating about it, Lizzie, is that out of the whole Jewish year, this is the one that people come to en masse. Mm-hmm. Thousands in the community I'm part of, where maybe week by week we have hundreds of people coming to things, thousands of people come.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we come? And it's really difficult. Why do we come? I think because of exactly what you're saying, is we know that this is really hard.
Mm-hmm.
We know, I mean, we as human beings, I'm not, we know that we can't, deep down, we know that we can't do this alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what you're saying is right, that it's incredibly helpful when we can be around people who aren't in the pit or who aren't lost, and that it can also be really helpful to be with other people and all know together that we're lost and that we're looking for a way home. And that's the sort of mood of that day, is thousands of people coming together and going, we're all lost together, we've all lost sight of the path together.
Mm.
What's it going to take for us to, even the saying it, so this is what I found in my own life, even the saying, I'm lost, I'm far away, is the start of the return. It's the start of the turning back to the path.
Yep.
So sometimes we need coaches and teachers and spiritual leaders and guides and books and everything. And sometimes all we need is another human being who's lost too, and we can say to one another, wow, we're really far away. And mm-hmm. then we're already taking the first steps back.
Yeah, and I'm also seeing, Justin, it's like you're doing that with someone in a container, which is something called atonement. And I don't know all the details of what your festival is. But the festival's not in the pit, if you know what I mean.
Right.
There's some, and that's what I'm just getting this thing of, like, all the practices that you have in your tradition come from a not pitness.
Yes.
And they are holding you in the pit, which is why it's so powerful to have these rituals and these practices and these traditions, because they were made out of consciousness of what it means to be in the pit. And so that so you're all held, those thousands of people are held together in something, in a structure that acknowledges what's going on. And I feel like we can create practices from consciousness that we can be in together, but the practice is the container for the lostness within it. But there's, it feels like there's always an element, there's never not an element of consciousness and sanity that is either available or holding us, or we're in it, or we're with somebody who's slightly saner than we are right now, and it might change backwards and forwards. But there is I'm just really moved by the fact that yes, you're lost with 100,000 people or whatever, but the thing you're lost inside of is something that's holding you, which is a consciousness around that thing, which is amazing. That's existed for God knows how long as well. Like, we are little tiny specks in a history that is deep and long and strong, that knows that this day was going to come where you'd be lost. And there's a practice for it. And there's a place to go for it. And there's a building for it. And there is a text for it. It's like a really beautiful way of describing what a faith is, or a tradition is, or a religion is. It's, it's really beautiful.
Thank you, Lizzie. That's a very powerful way for me of talking about, from another angle, of talking about something that's very important. And, I've just noticed the time, and it always happens.
Yes.
Time just keeps going, and we keep talking, and half an hour goes by. So I think we should call a formal and solemn close to episode 50 of Turning Towards Life. I just want to say again how grateful I am, Lizzie, to you, that we get to do this, and to the holding that third space is, that makes it possible for us to do this, and then for everyone who's alongside us watching, commenting. We love that you're here.
Yes.
And we'll be back next week.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week with another source and another Turning Towards Life. It will be 51 next week.
See you then.
Bye.